Welcome to the Game History Podcast, featuring interviews with some of the most renowned authors and up-and-coming talent in LGBTQ mysteries, suspense, and thrillers. I'm your host, Brad Shreve, and Justine Adamick is here with her weekly recommendation. My guest this week is Meg Perry, but before the interview, we have a few things to talk about. Last week's guest, Garrett Hudson, is also a Patreon member, and therefore he gets a shout-out to his favorite author. He mentioned him on the show, but he'd like to let people know that his favorite author is William Kent Kruger, who writes the Cork O'Connor series. And like Garrett, you can become a Patreon member for as little as $2 a month, and all you have to do is go to patreon.com/gamemysterypodcast, and you'll help support this show.
Sounds good, Brad. I hear you have news.
I do have news, and I'm glad that we had this unrehearsed question that you asked me.
Wait a minute. I got to do another reading. Brad, do you have news, right? Okay, let's go.
As a matter of fact, Justine, I do have news.
Wonderful.
The second in my Mitchell Riley series, it's called A Body on the Hill, is now available on pre-order.
And well, I'm not surprised because we rehearsed this, but I got to tell you, I'm just as tickled now as the first time I heard that news.
Well, that makes me very happy. It can be read as a standalone, but of course, I highly recommend to everyone that they buy both novels, of course.
Yeah, I have an ARC of your book, and they work as standalones better than most series that I know. You do a very good job of having it only refer a little bit to the previous book, but it is always better to read them in order, as with any series.
I agree. So again, it's A Body on the Hill, and thank you for asking.
Glad to have asked.
And you have a review for us today.
I do. It's a review of a book called Ghost Story, just like any other generic ghost story. And it's written by G.V. Pierce. G.V. as in good vibes. I don't know what G.V. really stands for. Pierce is spelled P-E-A-R-C-E, because with a generic title like Ghost Story, you'll be looking for it forever on Amazon. So it's important to have that author. This book came out on May 11th, 2020, just a few short days ago, and I saw it in the Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Facebook group, which we plugged last week, and which you and I have had the genesis of this relationship in this podcast. And Graham Cheater is a frequent poster there, posts a number of new releases. John posts a lot of new releases, and Graham catches some that slide through the cracks. And he put this book up. He said it was another new release that jumped out and said, buy me. And I didn't really buy it. I jumped out and grabbed a free sample, which you can do on Amazon on the ebook. So it gives you about the first 10% of the book. And by the time I got through that, I was hooked and ready to do it. It has Sherlock Holmes and John Watson set in modern times. They're married. They're in love. They're still detective and doctor. The tale is told from John Watson's point of view. He is not only a doctor, but he is a Afghanistan war vet, and he has PTSD. He's got war injuries, and Sherlock Holmes is still a detective with that brilliant Sherlock mind. Go ahead.
I just say one interesting twist on the story.
Ah, yeah, it is. And it gets even more interesting because Watson can see ghosts.
Mm.
Hence the title.
I was going to guess that.
Yes. Well, you get so deep into the, Watson this and there's still that. And then you forget, wait a minute, the title is Ghost Story. And Watson sees ghosts. What's really interesting is he doesn't realize they're ghosts. Not only can he see ghosts, but he can feel ghosts. He touched them and they feel just as substantial as a real person. And he's developed some coping mechanisms over the years. For example, if he's out in a crowded bar and someone comes up and tries to talk to him, he waits until someone nearby talks to them or introduces them, so he knows that they're really there and other people can see them before he engages in conversation, because he really cannot tell the difference between a real person and a ghost.
Interesting.
He has not told this to Sherlock. And I thought the focus would be on, you know, Sherlock finding out. No, Sherlock does not know. And so it sets up an interesting dynamic, because naturally, as they go into their cases, why else would you have a plot device of people seeing ghosts, except if the ghost is going to help you solve the murder? But Sherlock Holmes, being the brilliant observant detective that he is, would get suspicious if Watson turns up a clue that isn't otherwise available. So it's very clever. And this book gets an intriguing recommendation, because it's intriguing just how well that balance between Watson's knowledge of the ghosts and Sherlock Holmes's figuring out of the clues, how well balanced that dynamic is. Really quite wonderful. They visit a couple of cases. One is the main case of the story, and then they flash back to several other cases. So you see different examples of how they go about solving things.
So it gets an intriguing, and it sounds to me like an original type of storyline.
Yes, although let me just say that it is published by Improbable Press. And Improbable Press has a whole roster of books, all by different authors, which take Holmes and Watson and place them in different circumstances and reimagine the relationship that way.
Oh, that's interesting. I didn't know that they even existed.
So, yeah, I didn't realize that they had existed to the extent that you could have a whole press of doing this, and that there's really an original take on it. I thought this book was a very original take on reimagining Holmes and Watson.
So it's an intriguing recommendation for Ghost Story by G.V. Pearce, P-E-A-R-C-E.
Yes.
And go ahead.
Go ahead. I'm waiting for you. Oh. I'm waiting for you to do that unrehearsed bit that we had unrehearsed before the show.
Well, I told you I was going to do this one, and it is an anniversary. Justine is one of the founders of Requeered Tales, which we talk about on the show almost every week. And Requeered Tales releases once no longer published queer fiction, mostly mysteries, but not always. And they turned 1 year old this week. So happy anniversary, Justine and Alexander and Matt.
Yeah, thank you. We really appreciate it. We're excited to have gotten this far. Matt Lubbers Moore is appearing this week on a radio show. He's going to be on the show May 22nd. It's called House of Mystery Radio. It's on a LA area radio station and a Salt Lake City radio station. And you can listen to it live on the internet at houseofmysteryradio.com.
Houseofmysteryradio.com. That's exciting.
Yeah.
Anything else from Recurred Tales?
Well, we're coming out next week with the second book in the Lev Raphael's Nick Hoffman series, The Eden Wharton Mysteries. And I'll talk about that more on next week's podcast.
And we have Lev coming up in a few weeks.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
I am too. Well, thank you, Justine.
Thanks very much. I'm looking forward to you interviewing Meg Perry.
She's a lot of fun. We're sponsored by Requeered Tales, preserving our LGBTQ literary heritage one book at a time. Check them out at requeeredtales.com. My guest today is Meg Perry. Welcome to Gay Mystery Podcast, Meg.
Thank you. I'm delighted to be here.
Well, I'm delighted to have you on. I know you're a fan of the show, so it's always fun to have somebody that listens to be on. They know what to expect. Now, you live on a barrier island in East Central Florida.
Yeah, in Daytona Beach, to be exact. Yeah.
Daytona Beach. Mm-hmm. You're just a couple of blocks from the beach.
Yes. Yeah, I can see it if I stand in the corner of my front yard.
Oh, I'm jealous.
Yeah.
I always brag that I live near the beach, but it's about a 10 or 15 minute drive. So I'm very jealous of somebody like yourself. How are things going there right now?
Well, we're in a weird extended spring, which is wonderful because I've been able to spend more time outside as I'm working from home since March 18th. So rather than look at my four walls, I've been able to look at my street sometimes, and that's nice because working from home is getting a little old.
A little stir crazy.
Yeah.
Have the beaches filled since they lifted the restrictions?
Our beach patrol is pretty good about keeping people moving. I've started to see more vacationers in town not wearing masks. So, yay. 'Tis the season.
So you have to be moving?
Yes. Yes. You can't sit. You have to be walking, biking, jogging.
Okay. So
driving, whatever. Yeah.
It's really the same thing we have here in LA. You can jog, you can bike, or you can surf, but you can't.
Right.
You can't really be on the beach.
You can be active, but you can't just hang out there in a big crowd of people.
Yeah. Exactly. Okay. Well, I didn't know that. I thought you guys were wide open.
Well, no.
Not legally, at least.
Not legally. You're right.
Well, let's talk about Jamie Brody.
Yeah.
You've written just a few novels in your Jamie Brody series. How many is it so far?
With this new one that's coming out, it will be 20.
So, 20 total.
Yeah, and there's one more. So the series will end at 21.
Okay, so you end at 21. Now, when are we expecting the end of that series?
Probably November.
In November.
Yeah, it's taking place right now. But I don't like to write too far ahead because of things like the virus that popped up. Mm-hmm. And made me have to shift things back in time. So, it'll be November.
We must talk about Jamie. Mm-hmm. And you must know him pretty well by now.
Yes, I think I do.
Tell us what kind of person he is.
Jamie is, well, he's a librarian who intended to be a history professor. And his life took a turn. And he went to library school at the suggestion of a friend and has not regretted it. He is a librarian at the Charles Young Research Library at UCLA, which in academic library land is pretty high on the ladder. He was born in 1980, so he's at the tail end of Gen X. He's got two older brothers. One's a cop. I think every good amateur sleuth needs a cop in the family, so that they can get the police information that they need when they're trying to solve a case. He is a rugby player. He is married to Pete Ferguson, who is a psychology professor. When the books start, they're not married. They're just starting to date again. They had one attempt at a relationship that didn't go all that well. But now, by this time in the books, they are married. They've been married for about 4.5 years. And Pete has issues. Jamie was raised by Marines, and he's a very extroverted, fearless kind of guy. And Pete has all sorts of problems that they've had to deal with over the years. And there's going to be some more in this book, but I've been promising everybody a happy ending, and they will get it. I promise.
Can each of these be read as a standalone, or must they be read in order?
I have tried to make them as standalone as possible to go back and explain without, information dumps who I'm talking about when I mention somebody. They're certainly better enjoyed if you start from the beginning because you know the characters better. Right. But they can be read each individually. I had a consultation kind of a meeting with Nicole Kimberling. I don't know if you know Nicole, mm-hmm. but she's with Blind Eye Books. And she suggested that every book might be the first one that somebody picks up. And so as much as you can, always make them as close to standalone as you can get them. Now, after 20 books, it's getting harder.
But, I can imagine.
Yeah, but I try to do that so that you don't miss too much when you pick up number 17 or whatever for the first time.
So I can grab number 15 and it'll still make sense.
I think so, yes. And each mystery is self-contained. Each mystery is solved by the end of each book.
Okay, good.
It's just the character stuff that carries through.
Yeah, I am not a fan of cliffhangers. So
yeah, I don't do that.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Now, you know Sue Grafton, or I don't know if you knew her personally, but Mr. Author Sue Grafton.
Yeah, not personally, yeah.
She was very prolific, yes. As you know.
Yes.
And she wrote 25 novels in her Kinsey Millhone series, plus some short stories. Mm-hmm. Now, over the 30 or so years that she ran her series, Kinsey only aged about 8 years.
I know, bless her heart.
How much time has passed from the beginning to the end of Jamie's world?
Jamie's life takes place in real time. So he's aged 8 years. I started writing these in 2012. And he has moved through time, as we all have. So he was 32 when we started out. He's turning 40 this year, which I thought was a good time to put a cap on it, as it were.
I love it when writers do in real time.
Yeah. Well, I can't imagine how, you know, she had to go back and deal with not having cell phones and, good heavens, all of that. And now I go back and read some of the early stuff, and I'm talking about like software platforms that people don't really use anymore. But, that was the time. That was 2012. So, okay. But, yeah, I can't imagine it doing it any other way.
I think, Mr. Writer, it actually is easier if you write back in time because you don't have cell phones. They can't quickly look up the information. So,
yeah.
I like writing current day, but I envy those that don't.
Well, I envy those that can write historical fiction because all of the research that takes and getting everything just right, that's amazing to me.
Yeah.
I'm really impressed by that.
So we can expect the next Jamie Brody novel for our listeners. It's today.
Yes.
May 21st, Thursday. So What's the name of that book?
It's called Drugged to Death.
Drugged to Death.
Drugged to Death, yes.
Wow, that has multiple meanings.
Well, it does, yeah. This one, a little bit different in that it goes back and forth between the point of view of Jamie and his cop brother, Kevin, who is an LAPD homicide detective. Because I just couldn't have Jamie in place every time that he would have needed to be to move the story along. And once the Jamie books are done, I'm actually going to start a new series starring Kevin. So I thought this was kind of a way to get people used to hearing his voice too. And basically it starts out with two events. Pete gets a call in the middle of the night that his father, who had a massive heart attack years ago and has had congestive heart failure ever since, has taken a turn for the worse and is in the hospital. And Kevin gets called out in the middle of the night to a double overdose at one of the libraries at UCLA. And so those two stories sort of weave around each other. And even though it's not, the last book wasn't exactly a cliffhanger, there were a couple of things that didn't get totally resolved in that book. And so we're going to get those things resolved in this one. So I think this one is a little more involved mystery-wise than some of the others are, which will make a lot of people happy, I think, because sometimes I do get comments that, you know, well, the mystery wasn't very strong, but I love these characters. So I hope they like this mystery a little better.
People can be very forgiving if you have great characters.
Yes. Yes.
Are you familiar with Lawrence Block?
Yes.
Okay. I think I talk about him a lot in this book, on this show. He wrote the Burglar series. Mm-hmm. And the plots are, even though he's a brilliant writer, in that particular series, the mysteries are terrible. There's no way you could figure them out. They're so convoluted. But his characters are delightful.
Yeah.
And I've read every one there's one I hated. But because of his characters, I just love to read them.
Yeah. And I think that's why a lot of people read the Jamie characters is because, you know, read the Jamie books is because they're so invested in the characters now. And I have a lot of characters. It's not just Jamie and his husband and his a couple of friends and family, I have a huge cast of characters. And so I think that is a little different than some people do, in that most people have, you know, just the detective or the PI and a few sidekicks and that's it. And I've got a whole population of, I've got a spreadsheet, and I've got over 700 characters in the whole series.
Oh my, that sounds like a J.K. Rowling novel.
Well, they don't, some of them only get named once, but that's how many named characters I've had in 20 books.
Wow.
So yeah, so it's quite a world, you know, that I've created, I think. And I think that's what a lot of people like about it, is because they feel like they're part of the family.
Well, it sounds like you've put together a pretty good Bible of events that have occurred and people that have shown up.
Well, I've tried, because I lose track of names that I give people. Mm-hmm. You know, I realized at one point that I'd named three different people Mitch. Now, how many guys named Mitch do you run into? But I've got three of them. So nobody else gets named Mitch. But yeah, it helps me keep track of who appeared when and how often they turn up and who they are and that kind of thing.
Well, I'm learning here a lesson from you.
Well, it's handy to have.
Yes, good job. Now, we know he got married. But how else has Jamie changed from book one to book 20?
Well, he was, when we started out, he had just been hospitalized. He has asthma, and he'd just been hospitalized after a bad attack. And his boyfriend at the time had broken up with him while he was in the hospital. And he's living with his brother and her and his girlfriend, Kevin's girlfriend. And he is just sort of, he's not in a very good place. He was a Rhodes Scholar. He was in Oxford when his longtime boyfriend broke up with him. And so that's when he decided to go to library school, because the career he was going to have as a history professor was too tied into his ideals of his life with how it was going to be with Ethan. And so he had to do something else. And he was sort of a mess there for a while. And when the books open, he's still sort of a mess. He really hasn't quite found his footing yet, because he's had this series of short-term relationships where the guys always keep breaking up with him. And his self-esteem has taken a hit. So gradually over time, when we first meet Pete, it seems like he's the one who has his act together. And then over time, Jamie figures his life out, and he gets his act together and gets his feet back under him. And Pete is the one who gradually sort of disintegrates. So he's become his true self by the end of the book at books. And I think that he's made a lot of progress. He's, you know, he's turning 40. He's married. He's finally trying to figure out, you know, do I want to be a librarian forever, or what's going to happen with that? Where do I want to live? And so these last couple of books are going to solidify a lot of that for him.
So he's had some growth.
Yeah, he has.
How does it feel to be ending the series?
You know, it's very strange, because it's a comfort. They're comfort reads for me too. It's comfort writing. I don't know if that's a thing, but you know, when I'm aggravated with my own life, I can go live with Jamie for a while and forget about what's going on with me. And it's going to be hard. I should say at this point that I don't think we've seen the last of Jamie. I'm going to take a break from him, definitely, because I have other things I want to do with Kevin and with his partner, John Eckhoff. But I don't think we've seen the last of Jamie. He and Pete are moving to New Mexico at the end of the last book, and that's well established. That's not a spoiler for anybody. But the question is, will they stay there? Will there be more bodies there? Maybe. I'm not sure. But we might see Jamie again. But the 21 books are what my editor refers to as the canon. So that's the series. And then if there will be more later, then great.
Well, I would think you'd have the luxury, if nothing else, have them show up in the Kevin series.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, it's not like they're not going to be talking to each other.
Right. A little guest appearance here and there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, yes, we have not seen the last of him, but Jamie will be taking a little break.
Well, what made you decide to end it?
Well, I've read a lot of series that have gone on past that have jumped the shark and just mm-hmm. kept going, you know. I won't name any, but I didn't want to do that. And I wanted to put a period on the sentence and sort of have Jamie and Pete ride off into the sunrise in their case, because they're going east, not west, but have a resolution to everything that they've been through, all of the stumbling over the bodies and all of the issues they've had in their personal relationship and everything with the family and everything. I just wanted to give them an ending that would settle them for a while. And so I think I'm doing that.
Well, not wanting to jump the shark and ending it beforehand, I say good on you.
Well, I hope I'm doing that.
You're right. TV shows, movies, and novels sometimes go way beyond their lifespan.
Yeah.
And it's really always sad to see that happen.
Yeah.
Well, it is time for Awkward Questions Authors Get.
Oh, yay. I can't wait to see what I get.
Okay. Now, as you know, what I do is spin the wheel and you get mm-hmm. a question. Sometimes they're generally questions we get. Sometimes they can be difficult to answer or just awkward or sometimes just downright rude. Yeah. We'll see what you get.
Okay.
So hang tight and we're going to spin the wheel. Okay. Yours isn't so tough.
Okay.
It's not a rude question, but it's sometimes hard for us to answer. Who do you base your characters after?
Oh, well, I have a very small handful of characters that are, I wouldn't even call them secondary characters. There's tertiary characters that are exact people. And I won't tell who they are in case those people would happen to listen to this. But yeah, I've had a couple of people that I've worked with that have just been so incredible, unbelievable, jaw-droppingly weird or different that I said, I have to put them in a book. So I did. All of the librarians have part of me in them, I guess. Mm-hmm. The one that is most like me is named Sheila Meadows, who is the director of the business library at UCLA. But I think Jamie has a lot of my thoughts. You know, I write in first person. His voice comes out of my head very strongly. So I think he has some of my personality traits in his snarkiness and his intolerance for stupidity. Well, I'm a librarian in a community college. You know, I see a lot of stupidity.
Well, I'm sure you do. that's funny. Well, I think it's hard to not have a little bit of us in all our characters, especially the main character.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I have all of the Brodies. There's some of me in all of them. Pete is not like anything like me, I have to say. But Jamie, for sure, and his friend Liz and his sister-in-law, Kristen. Actually, Kristen is the librarian I would like to be if I had my life to do over. She's a force to be reckoned with. So, yeah, there's little pieces of me scattered all around in the library there.
Well, we're going to move from old to the new.
Okay.
Last year, you published the first in the new series, Space Coaster Series.
Yes. Yes, the Space Coaster Mysteries.
In what ways does that differ from the Jamie Brody Mysteries?
Oh, my goodness. Well, it takes place here in Florida, for one thing. And my characters are a space reporter, and that is a real thing. Somebody commented in a review that said, that's stupid. Whoever heard of a space reporter? Well, we have them here because we live at the Space Coast. And the other character is an agent of the Air Force Office of Special Investigations. And they meet in the aftermath of a rocket explosion when a dead body is found in the debris field. That's the first book. And my editor that I mentioned earlier is a space reporter. He has about eight jobs, but that's the main one. So I have a lot of inside information on this one. So it's, again, you know, I'm not writing about a library, but I am writing about something that I know a lot about and that Chris can also fill in the rest of it. So it, when you read the Jamie series, you get a lot of insight into how libraries work. When you read the Space Coast series, you get a lot of insight into how the current space program works. And it will be a series, but I don't think it's going to be nearly as long. I think it'll wrap up in probably maybe 3, maybe 4, maybe 5, no longer than that.
Books. Not in the 20s.
No, definitely not.
When can we expect the next Space Coast Mystery?
Well, I'm hoping by this summer. I've got it about half written. I've got distracted. I know you've probably been through this too. It's been a little bit hard to write these days.
Yes.
But I need to get back to them. And I know where the story is going. So I think I can finish it up and have it out by late summer. And it's going to be called, the first one is called 12 Seconds. And this one will be called 3,000 Miles.
Now, something I find very interesting about you is you told me that you're the only person in the Western Hemisphere who has never watched or read anything of Harry Potter.
That is true.
That is a surprise. Any particular reason?
No. The books just never really appealed to me. I mean, I knew what they were about, obviously, but they're so long, and I've thought, I'm getting older. Do I want to spend that much time of the rest of my life reading these books? And then I didn't go to the movies because I hadn't read the books. And I was in Oxford once with a study abroad group, and we're sitting in the middle of the courtyard of the Bodleian Library. And that's, you know, for librarians, that's heaven. That's nirvana. Sitting in the courtyard of the Bodleian Library. And the students were all like, oh, let's go see where Harry Potter got filmed. And I was like, no, 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 please, no. So I think because of people's absurd enthusiasm for it has kind of turned me off to it somehow. Maybe I'll read them someday. I don't know. They just seemed to me at the time when they came out like kids' books.
Mm-hmm.
And I know adults love them too, but it's just something I haven't gotten around to. I mean, my gosh, I haven't even started any of Gregory Ashe's books yet. I've got to read those.
You've got a lot to catch up on.
I've got a lot to catch up on.
Well, it's funny. I was chastised on Twitter, which I'm just starting to get a little more involved in, for making a comment about Harry Potter. It was not a positive comment. And somebody said, well, you're being unfair. Those are written for children. I'm like, no, I know adults that like eat it up.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
But I've never read the books, mm-hmm. and I'm glad there's nobody here to throw stones at me. But I think the movies are real overrated. So I don't think you're missing much.
Well, good. I don't think I am either. You know, I love, it's not that I don't like Wizards and Fantasy and stuff. I love Lord of the Rings. I read those when I was very young and saw the movies and, you know, watched them over and over. So it's not that. It's just, but that was for grownups. We're both going to get stoned at this rate.
Exactly. The volume just got turned off on a lot of iPhones just now.
Yeah.
You do something most authors don't do. You create soundtracks for your books.
Yeah. Yeah.
Tell me about that.
Thing. Well, I didn't do it starting out, but then I got to the point where I was starting to see the books as I read them after I wrote them in terms of a screenplay. I'm in a writer's group with six other writers, and two of them are screenwriters. And I think that sort of influences sometimes the way I think about my scenes. How would this play out on a screen? But I grew up with music. I listened to music all the time, and it just made sense to me to start adding music into some of these scenes to help set the scene better. And so I think I started with Stacked to Death, which I believe was book seven or eight, seven, I think. Then from then on, every time after a book has been out for a couple of weeks, because I don't want to do any spoilers by, you know, listing a soundtrack, then I put the soundtrack on my Facebook page. I'm going to start putting it on Twitter too, but a different song each day moving through, you know, so if this book was a movie, this would be the soundtrack to that movie.
What a fun idea.
Yeah. Yeah. It helps me think more clearly about how I want the scenes to look. And then sometimes I can go back and write a better scene based on the song that I've chosen for that scene.
Very clever. Now, you and I have never met.
Nope.
But I feel I know you well from the Gay Mystery Thriller Suspense Fiction group on Facebook.
Yeah.
And that's how I know you're such an avid reader. Even though you may not have had read Harry Potter or Gregory Ash, you read a lot. In fact, I took a peek, you've reviewed almost 700 books on Goodreads.
Yeah.
How often do you go through a novel? Any idea how many you go through in a month?
Well, it comes in spurts, I would say. I'll read like mad for a while, and then I won't for a while, or I'll switch to nonfiction for a while. I do like to read nonfiction. I especially like true crime. It gives me ideas about how to have cops move and talk and everything. But yeah, I've been reading since I was 3 years old, and I read a lot, and I read fast. You know, I'm a fast, one of those people that is fast reader.
I am. So,
yeah. Now that means that occasionally I'll miss something, but yeah, I can get through a book in a couple of days if I'm not distracted too badly.
Can you tell us what you're reading now?
I just finished Frank Butterfield's latest Nick and Carter adventure. I've read every single one of the Nick and Carter books since the beginning, and I just love those guys. And I think I mentioned when we were doing our sound check, Frank lives just down the road from me, and we've become friends. And I love his books. They're a lot of fun. So that's the last thing I just finished.
And he's written one or two Nick and Carter novels.
One or two, yeah.
Well, I don't know what... Go ahead.
He ended at 32. So I don't have the record for the longest series by any means.
What is it about you folks in Daytona Beach?
Oh, well, it's, you know, it's like Frank said once early on, when I not long after I met him, there's nothing to do here but write and drink. And he has a point. It's not a real high culture area. So, you know, you go to the beach, you write, and you drink.
Some would say that's a pretty good life.
It's a good life. It's a good life. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Meg, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Oh, yes. Thank you. You're right. It has zoomed by.
Holy cow. It always does, doesn't it?
Well, I'll come back when the last Jamie Brody book comes out.
Okay. That's a deal.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for your time, and thank you for being on.
Oh, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Hit the subscribe button wherever you hear our show so you don't miss a single episode. Tell a friend, too. Thank you for listening.